W Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. President-elect Trump rang the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange today and was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And the president-elect also looking ahead to his inauguration.
The incoming White House press secretary confirms the invitation was given to Xi Jinping as an example of President-elect Trump reaching out to America's adversaries and competitors in addition to its allies. There's no indication yet that Xi has agreed to come, and analysts who study China say they don't expect he will. But if he does, it would be a historic move. The State Department has no record of any foreign head of state attending the inauguration of an American president, at least not since 1874.
ABC's Stephen Portnoy. Lawmakers asking for more transparency in the investigation of the recent drone sightings in New Jersey. White House National Security Advisor John Kirby says there's no foreign country involved yet and no public safety risk. And crews in California getting a break a bit from those Santa Ana winds as they battle a wildfire in Malibu. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm. For 97.9 WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. The Arctic air has arrived. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot tells us how to tell if we're getting frostbite.
Today, remember to cover all exposed skin. Frostbite can happen in as little as 20 minutes in today's conditions. Frostbite symptoms can include pain, numbness, swelling, blisters, and skin discoloration. It's most common on your fingers, toes, nose, and ears. And frostbite may lead to permanent, irreversible tissue damage. A way to prevent it is to limit your time outdoors and warm your body up often if you're exposed to freezing temperatures. And if you believe that you have frostbite, go inside or seek shelter from the cold. Then, call your healthcare provider or visit the emergency room immediately to reduce your risk of tissue damage. Frostbite symptoms appear in three stages that include feeling cold, sore, and painful, which is frost nip. Then, pins and needles, which is surface frostbite. And the last, numbness, indicates a deep frostbite.
The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction has received $10 million in grant funding for programs that help kids with disabilities in correctional facilities enter the workforce. The funding comes from the U.S. Department of Education's Disability Innovation Fund program and will spread out over a five-year period. Officials hope the program cuts down on the number of kids who reoffend. A 30-year-old Oshkosh woman was charged with second-degree reckless injury and bail jumping after the car she allegedly was driving crashed into a house in Grand Chute Monday. The criminal complaint says Andy Anthony and a male passenger hid in a shed after the accident. The crash scene, police found drug paraphernalia and cash that had fallen out of the car. Anthony has an open case in Fond du Lac County for cocaine possession. In this case, the judge has set a $25,000 cash bond, and her next court appearance is January 16th. I'm Lisa Hale, 97.9 WGBW News. For news anytime, log on to WGBW.fm.
The Brewers add some lefties. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. At the winter baseball meetings, the Brewers have added two left-handed minor league pitchers to their 40-man roster, Connor Thomas from the Cardinals and Grant Wolfram from the Texas Rangers. College football, the Badgers need a new quarterback. Braden Locke says he's entering the transfer portal. So is Tyler Van Dyke. Last night, receiver Trek Kekahuna changed his mind and will return to Wisconsin. NFL, the Packers face the Seahawks, led by their new head coach, Mike McDonald, former Ravens defensive coordinator Matt LaFleur.
I think Mike's done an outstanding job. It's a great scheme. They can throw a lot of different coverages at you, a lot of different fronts, different looks, and then you combine that with really good players, then it can be a problem.
Seattle's Mike McDonald.
They play a great brand of football. They've been doing it throughout their entire franchise history, and especially since Matt's got there and doing his thing. So we got a lot of respect for them and how they play.
That's Seahawks head coach Mike McDonald with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
It may look pretty outside, but it does not feel like it. With high temperatures today trying to tap 10 degrees, those feisty winds are really making it feel more like 5 to 15 below. Overnight lows bottom out near zero, and for tomorrow, slightly warmer, rising to near 20. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 8 degrees.
Thanks to Total Wine, you saved more on all the gifts for the ones you adore. Wine, spirits, beers all nestled on shelves. Got some advice from our helpful elves. Oh, so, so many gifts to explore when you go, go to Total Wine and more. Bottle so delightful, whoa, whoa, whoa. Priced so amazingly low, low, low.
Curbside pickup and delivery available and the lowest prices for over 30 years only at Total Wine and More.
Drink responsibly, B21.
The holidays are here, and it's nearly time to pick a present from our grown-up gift list with our Civic Media statewide Text to Win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of our grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on our grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in our statewide contest. Dom Selvia.
Next time, former U.S. Attorney and host of Amicus, a Law Review, James Santel will join me to discuss the ramification of FBI Director Christopher Wray stepping down, what it means for the FBI specifically and the DOJ in general. Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we are all about real news and great conversation. Stay up to date in your community every weekday with the Civic Media's Local News Roundup podcasts. You can listen on the Civic Media website or subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite pods. Go check that out. I get them every day and take a listen. My next guest, her name is Michelle Kramer. She's a parent in the Menominee Falls School District who recently filed a discrimination complaint related to the removal of a book called Love Makes a Family, which represents an LGBTQ plus family. Obviously saying that love makes a family and embracing the idea that there are different family structures. Apparently, another parent in the school district had asked for the book to be removed under a particular procedure in the school district. The book was removed. And then Michelle and at least one other parent filed a complaint basically saying, hey, by removing this book, you're harming diversity. You're adding to the hostile environment in the school district related to LGBTQ plus families and students. Michelle, welcome to the show. I'm joined by my co-host, Tom Paulswitz. Really appreciate you making time. The crux was that the school district had refused to schedule a school board meeting to hear your complaints. Where does that stand? Have you had a hearing yet before the school board?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. We filed this back in August, and it's been quite the adventure. Through the school district process. So we have met with the HR director, the superintendent, and then we were supposed to have met with the school board, as you mentioned, but we were denied that opportunity. They said, go right to DPI. We look forward to hearing what they say. So recently we just kind of joined their meeting and shared our thoughts during public comment.
And that was just this week, was it not?
Yes, it was on Monday.
Monday, the 9th. Yes, it's hard to keep track of the dates these days. So were you allowed to speak? Did they take public comment during the school board meeting this past Monday?
So they did take public comment, and I believe 13 of us, like-minded parents and community members, were able to speak and share our thoughts, and that was a really cool moment.
I'm glad that you at least had that opportunity. Why is it that the school board is unwilling to follow their own procedure, which is procedure 411, which allows families to present their concerns at an appropriate meeting? Did the school board, do you feel like that procedure has now been satisfied by the meeting on Monday?
No, I don't. It should have been much more of a dialogue and conversation and exploratory together. Their response to us stated that they were concerned about us being concerned about their kind of bias with making a decision at that role of the complaint, because they were the ones who made the decision in the first place. So they said, go right to DPI. But I, of course, could hypothesize other reasons as well.
Wow. Tom, I'm going to turn it over to you in a minute if you've got questions for Michelle, but I just wanted to get that last part straight. So the administrative oversight body of a school district, the school board, that has an explicit policy which allows parents to request that the administrative oversight board revisit one of its decisions, said that they were concerned about your concerns, and so they won't follow their own policy to review a prior decision. I mean, am I getting that mostly right?
Yeah, concern that we would see their decision at that level, a school board meeting, as biased because they would be the ones ruling on their own removal of a book.
Interesting. Then why have a policy that permits parents to ask the school board to review a prior decision? It makes no sense. By the way, I mean, I won't hide the baseball or hide the punchline here at all or play inside baseball. Removing a book simply because it includes an LGBTQ plus family and says that love makes a family is a biased decision by the Menominee Falls School Board. I'm going to bring my co-host Tom in here. Do you have a question for Michelle, Tom?
Yeah, a question, but I'll make an observation first. Reading the article about when you first brought the complaint, I think the school board had talked about this being an alternative lifestyle book.
Yes.
And should it be replaced by something more of a religious variety type book? And I just wanted to see, Michelle, if you had a comment on that component of what they were talking about.
Yeah. During the public comment, someone brought this up, that they had made different kinds of suggestions for books to replace, such as ones about animals and other things. I think the zoo specifically, maybe. But again, you would see all different types of families at the zoo. So I'm not sure that that would serve their purpose. But yes, there were other suggestions made.
Yeah. And then they also fell back on one of their policies, which seems to me they didn't give you a very good answer on exactly what part of the policy they were relying on. And it seems like they just want to throw this back up to the DPI and get some more guidance. But because I know that this has happened in the Elmbrook School District also, where it took one parent to question a book and it was taken out of circulation. There seems to be, a difference of opinion of how that process should work. Have you had a chance to discuss that with either the administration or the school board about a more equitable policy when it comes to this?
Yeah, I mean, so fortunately or unfortunately, the facts of this case, I think, are a little bit different than what has happened in other districts, in that the policy was actually changed after the removal of the book. And it was put online for a very short time after the vote was made. And then once we filed with DPI, it could no longer be found. So there are many things like that that have occurred that we have outlined in our complaint, where things just aren't quite, very transparent or weren't done in the proper order. And that we can, say that this wasn't the right decision for these reasons of the moves that you've made.
Hmm. And then what do you think is going to happen next?
I can say what I hope will happen next.
It's a good starting point. Yes.
Is that DPI will hopefully, Dr. Underlie has been a ally of the LGBTQ plus community and has been entrusted with this power of being state superintendent. And so we hope that she will see the facts of this case alongside, state and federal laws, statutes regarding protected classes and educational guidelines from DPI about content that should be available in the classroom and, assist and rule in our favor, but we'll have to wait for that.
And do you have a date on when do you think that ruling will be happening?
They said several months is what they said.
Okay. Wow. Michelle, question for you. Are you or any of the other parents planning on running for school board?
You know, I don't think anything has been solidified yet, but it will be exciting to see who does run when the date gets closer for announcing that.
It's been alarming to me that it seems that the movement, whether we're talking about, you know, addressing the accurate record of America's history regarding race, or discussing the reality that gay people in the LGBTQ community exists, that the approach has been to literally whitewash and try to erase both our history and the reality of our present, to act as if gay people don't exist today, or the LGBTQ plus community doesn't exist, to act like families that are LGBTQ plus don't exist, to act like our nation's incredibly complicated history with race and its echoes and impacts on today doesn't exist. As a parent, not only from the perspective of a hostile environment, but just for the point of like access to a complete educational experience, what to you has been most alarming and thus catalyzing you to get involved in this way and to speak up and out?
Yeah, so there are a couple things you said right there. One, we pointed to all of that in our complaint, that, you know, our nation has come so far in making sure that everyone is included, and this is a huge setback. And we wouldn't want to do that for anyone else either. And so that was one point. One is, we've presented evidence that it's really important that kids see themselves in their education in order to best participate and engage, which therefore benefits the district in increased, you know, engagement, learning, test scores, of course, is what we look at, and all of that. So we really want all students to be able to engage, and it's for the future too. I have one in first grade now, and I have an 18-month-old that will be in the district in the future, and we want to raise them for the world that they're going to enter, to be ready to be kind, participating, you know, empathetic members of the workforce and the communities that they live in.
One last question for you, Michelle. Have you or any of the other parents in the district considered leaving the Menominee Falls School District because of these sorts of policies and these kinds of trends?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, that has come up for some of the families, and it's been difficult to listen to because, you know, the families I've been in touch with are really awesome contributors to the community. They're teaching their kids kindness, to be good friends, but also participating within the PTO and things like that, and school sports. So it's hard to hear that this decision is affecting, you know, whether people want to be included in the district or not.
Mm. What difficult choices for parents.
Yeah,
go ahead, Tom.
Very difficult. Michelle, did you feel like that you and the other 12 parents that got up to speak about this issue, do you think it swayed the school board in any sense?
No, I also don't think that was our goal either. I don't think we had any hopes that they would, but I think that it was to get awareness out. You know, I think that 99% of the people I've talked to are supportive of this and are like-minded. And so just making sure that people in our district, but others, know about our efforts, and so that we can work together to keep this moving forward.
Folks, that's Michelle Kramer. She's one of the parents who filed a discrimination complaint with the school district of Menominee Falls back in August. It took them until just this week to have the school board actually hear their complaint. My best of luck to you, Michelle. I speak for Tom as well on this. With your complaint, I hope DPI gets back to you. And happy holidays to you and every parent and family in the Menominee Falls School District. Folks, when we come back, we're going to be joined by a very special guest. Have you ever tried to get a degree while working and parenting? My goodness, my guest just did that and is graduating this Saturday. You know him well, and so do I. You're not going to want to miss this. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm
97.9 WGBW and WGBW.FM.
It was time to make our own Christmas traditions. For years, we've been trekking to both sets of in-laws, both Christmas dinners. It was just too much. So this year, we started to look for a place to get together in Alexandria, Minnesota. Christmas lights that will light up our kids' faces, a new adventure, create some wonder. It makes us wonder, Why didn't we do this sooner?
Start planning your time together in the Lakes area. Explore your holiday getaway options at explorealex.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We have state updates today, including North Carolina's Supreme Court race and a power grab by its legislature, ranked choice voting in Alaska, and more charges in Wisconsin for Donald Trump's fake elector scheme advisors. We reported December 11th that a GOP state Supreme Court candidate who lost by 734 votes and failed in two recounts asked the North Carolina Election Board to invalidate 60,000 voters. North Carolina Newsline reports that in a 3-2 vote Wednesday, the board rejected that request, though a court appeal is likely. Also December 11th, the North Carolina legislature overrode Governor Roy Cooper's veto of a bill designed to strip power from the incoming Democratic governor and attorney general. In an attempt to retain GOP power before it loses its supermajority, the authority to appoint election board members was shifted to the state auditor, a Republican. The attorney general was also stripped of any ability to bring suit against legislation proposed by the legislature. In Alaska, a recount of the attempted repeal of ranked choice voting and open primaries is complete. The repeal failed by 0.25%. In Wisconsin, 10 additional felony forgery charges were brought against Trump campaign advisors, attorney Jim Trupas, attorney Kenneth Chesbro, and Election Day director Mike Roman. We have links to more on all of these stories at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're going to want to stay put, everybody, because my next special guest isn't quite here yet, but he will be joining me at the bottom of the hour. If you're a parent that has ever juggled finishing your degree and parenting and working and all that stuff, you know how hard it is to get that to that magic graduation day. His graduation's coming up on Saturday. He's going to join me at 3:30 to talk with Tom and I about the experience and his journey. Do not miss that. And of course, Dom Salvia comes back at the top of the hour. He's going to drop a keyword on you so that you can participate by texting that keyword via the Civic Media app in Civic Media's grown-up gift grab bag text to win contest. Lots of fun prizes for you all. And from Chippewa Falls, you had a question about this last segment. Please go ahead.
Hi, Maggie. I just want to make a comment to Michelle. You are a hero, Michelle. You just keep fighting for what is right. I'm so proud of you for calling in. We are definitely going backwards. I'm a former teacher, and this is just appalling to me. The white Christian nationalists now have the power because of Project 2025 and Trump. And I'm so glad I'm not teaching anymore, but I'm telling you, these young people that have children in school districts, my hats go off to you. And I just want her to know that I'm so proud that she called in, because you can't tell me that there's not one Republican out there that has a gay child or someone from the LGBTQ plus community. Shame on them. That's all I have to say. Thank you, Maggie.
Thanks so much, Anne. I think Tom and I would concur wholeheartedly with that. Speaking of bought and paid for elected officials, how about that for a transition? Axios had a headline just yesterday that said, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema give their final middle finger to their constituents as they leave the Senate. Tell us what that's all about, Tom, and your take on their votes.
Well, the National Labor Relations Board currently has a majority of Democrats compared to Republicans. So they tend to be ruling based more on workers' rights than, quote, corporate rights. And this was a way to lock in that Democratic majority moving forward. And there was a vote, which was there was a lot of pressure put on by unions and other people to get Schumer to actually hold the vote in the Senate. And it looked like it was going to be close, but I think it was implied that Manchin and Sinema would be voting for this. Mm-hmm. But by the time it actually came closer to the vote, Sinema voted no, and Joe Manchin was nowhere to be found. So it was 49-49 at that point. And then word was received that Joe Manchin was running back to the Senate in order to cast his vote against having this person continue to sit on the board. And when you think about that, it has nothing to do with their constituents. The current people they represent, it has everything to do with their corporate donors who said, we would like you to give us back some of the rights that we want to have, like being able to classify people as contract workers versus employees, and being able to basically, you know, allow people to work overtime without necessarily having to pay them. And and you and I have talked about money in politics a lot, but I think the bottom line here is this was an obvious vote to take care of their donors, and it was a direct insult to the people that voted for them in the beginning. And there are no consequences because they're on their way out.
Of course. And the idea that Joe Manchin, who represents West Virginia, would not take a pro-labor vote. And it's not like he was actually making rules as the NLRB. He was voting to confirm a nomination for Lauren McFerrin to serve another term on the NLRB, which would have kept Democrats in control of the NLRB for another year or
so.
For 2 years. Thanks, Tom.
Yep.
So, like, there's no downside. There's literally no downside for him to do the thing that would be better for West Virginians. There was no downside for Kristen Sinema, except maybe if you're actually thinking about your next job in the private sector and pleasing your corporate overlords that may be the ones deciding how much you earn in your next job. It's absolutely ridiculous. By the way, Sinema hasn't been around or cast a vote in the Senate since Thanksgiving, but she came back for this one.
She made it back for this one.
And Joe Manchin was like across town in D.C., as you mentioned, and had to like rush back because had he not done so, they would have had a tie and it would have gone to VP Harris.
He did a John McCain in the weirdest way possible, right? He showed up at the last minute and said, no, I'm not for the workers. Thank you very much.
It's just... It's literally an embodiment of why money in politics is totally wrong, right? And I don't care if you're a Democratic big money donor or a Republican one. It's equally corrupting. But the reality is when our tax system allows someone to acquire so much wealth that they can spend $10 million a day every day for 100 years and still have nearly $150 billion left, money in politics will, of course, screw the middle class like that, like dot, 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 like cause effect. Like that is how it works. And we can argue about tax rates and tax burdens and all like the details of that until we're blue in the face. But until we understand that we have locked corruption into our system and that we, the people, as Tom from L.A. likes to say, are the government and do something about this. In other words, a constitutional amendment to fix this. We're going to continue to see senators and congresspeople voting against the best interests of their constituents because they have to get their campaigns paid for.
And to tie this back, what we were talking about before when it comes to the economy, we talked about inflation, but the other side of it is wage growth. This is going to depress wage growth. So not only is inflation probably going to be increasing, wage growth is now going to be decreasing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be an even further crunch on the middle class and those of us that work. So stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz, my special guest host this Thursday afternoon. You can find him with me every Thursday for the entire show because it's more fun with my friend Tom. And now in the next segment, we got our special guest who's graduating from UWM while parenting and working, I'd say, kind of a high-profile job. We're going to hear from him next. Cannot
wait.
Pretty full-time job. I'm Maggie Nawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Your farm update with Pam Yonke is next.
This This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Thank you for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires on this Civic Media station. The Patriotic Millionaires are financial supporters through paid advertising on some Civic Media stations.
Whey has been dairy's best good news story over the last few years. I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report along with you on a Thursday. Ryan Yonkman joins us. He's a dairy broker and analyst at EverEgg. He says really since the pandemic, the demand for whey protein for supplements and fitness drinks has been on fire. Ryan tells us that the market is staying hot, bringing near record prices.
The dry whey market is trading at about 75 cents a pound, which is about 10 cents away from its all-time high, and by all means trading in basically the 100th percentile. And that has added tremendous value back to the Class 3 price, putting it darn near back near its highs we saw in September.
And we'll take a look at those Class 3 milk prices in just a moment. Ryan Yonkman with the good news story today on the whey market. Ryan is a dairy broker and analyst with EverEgg. Stick around.
There goes Pam Yonke across Wisconsin in her suburban truck. Thanks to Equity Livestock Cooperative, marketing your livestock, financing your operation, and supporting the livestock community since 1922. And Cleary Building Corp. Visit clearybuilding.com to see the Cleary difference. Be sure to keep up with Pam and her travels at MidwestFarmReport.com and on Facebook at Midwest Farm Report, on Instagram at MWF Report, or by downloading the Midwest Farm Report app.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Thursday from Chicago, Class 3 milk prices have soared. The January contract is up 70 cents at 2022 a hundredweight, and the February Class 3 milk contract is trading up 63 cents at $20.12 a hundredweight. Class 3 milk goes to make cheese, which also saw a lift on the close. Barrel cheese was up a nickel and a half at $1.73, and the 40-pound block cheese up 3¾ cents at $1.78¾. On the dairy product side, if we also take a look at AA butter, that's down a quarter of a penny at $2.52½. Grain prices closed lower for the most part. Cash corn down 4¾ cents at $4.43½. 2025 new crop corn down 2¼ cents, closing at $4.41¾. Cash soybeans closed up a quarter of a penny at $9.95¾, but 2025 new crop beans were down a half a cent at $10.14 a bushel. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It may look pretty outside, but it does not feel like it. With high temperatures today trying to tap 10 degrees, those feisty winds are really making it feel more like 5 to 15 below. Overnight lows bottom out near zero, and for tomorrow, slightly warmer, rising to near 20. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 8 degrees.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy. We're talking about the Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge.
I think it's important for everyone to know that this was the state that in 1959 first granted public employees the right to organize and bargain collectively. We have a lot to take back. You know, I used to say take back America, but I say take back Wisconsin.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will be recombobulating Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulationary to break down all the news, and we'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
back or welcome, everybody. Hope you are having a wonderful Friday Eve. Please stay warm out there. Mind the roads. There's going to be ice where you didn't think there was ice before. You got to be careful. Bundle up, y'all. I am so excited to have my next guest join me alongside co-host Tom Paulswitz for our next segment. Have you or someone you loved tried to finish your undergrad or a grad degree while working and parenting? I had friends when I was in law school and grad school that did that, and I had no idea how they got it done, because I could barely finish my degrees when it was just little old me.
Exactly.
This man is getting that done and graduates this Saturday, and his job is probably a little more high profile than most. Welcome, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. How are you, David?
I am doing well. Thank you, Maggie, for having me. And Tom, good to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear yours too.
How long has this taken, David? How long have you been in this journey to work, parent, and get your undergrad done?
Well, the past 2.5 years, I have been back. But I started my educational journey the fall of 2006. So if we want to start from there, it's about 18 years. It's a long time coming, but definitely a sacrifice this past couple of years to make sure that I get that degree this upcoming weekend.
Well, I'll be one of the first, I hope, on public airwaves to say congratulations for your perseverance.
Thank you.
That it is really an incredible accomplishment. And I'll just say this generically without any specifics. Not all elected officials without undergraduate collegiate degrees have felt similarly motivated to finish their degrees as you have, sir. I'll just say that real generally. I've got a question for you, because as I heard that you were finishing your degree, I thought, can you keep it like on the DL in class? Like, did people know who you were? Did you have constituents being like, David, I've got the problem with the this and the thus, and can you fix this? How did that work? Was it okay? Did people leave you alone, or were you getting a lot of complaints and requests and things?
You know, I will tell you a story, and it's one of the in-person classes I had. I was in a public speaking class, which is actually a requirement for UW-Milwaukee in order to graduate. And I remember giving my first speech and volunteering to give the first speech of the class. And when I was done, all my classmates looked at the teacher assistants and were like, is that how we're supposed to sound? Is this what public speaking is? And ironically, one of my classmates just so happened to be the niece of our parks director, Guy Smith.
Wow.
And so he told the class.
Nice.
No, he's the county executive. And he does this all the time and all that. And the class is like, oh. And then somebody said, well, I have a question. And I was like, well, what's your question? And they asked me, what's a county executive? And so it provided an opportunity to explain to many of the students. But, you know, majority of the time, folks did not know who I was until somebody actually told them.
Well, that is both alarming and good for you also, like keeping the low profile. But
incognito.
They didn't know what a county executive was. I also will say this, David, and I hope you don't mind me giving you this feedback, I guess, as it were. You know, you and I worked together for a number of years, and you had to start as a chief CEO level elected official at one of the hardest times to ever do such a thing, in the absolute beginning, the bottom, I don't know, however we want to describe it, of COVID, when so very much what was happening. And I can just say this, David, having heard you address all kinds of different groups in all kinds of different places through every medium imaginable, huge groups, auditoriums, small dinners via Zoom and Teams and people that work for you and cabinet meetings and campaign events. You are one of the most compelling and genuine elected officials I have ever heard, full stop. And your ability to communicate as a real person and connect with people has only exponentially improved since the first time I saw you address a group of people. And it was a real honor and privilege to watch you get to an expert level, sort of speaker level. You could have taught the public speaking class. You didn't need to be a student in it. So I hope you don't mind me saying that. It is truly unique when Democrats talk about we need authentic messengers. Sir, you are it.
Yeah. You know, I truly appreciate that. And honestly, that's one of the things that I was able to utilize my educational experience, particularly this past semester, the past few semesters, to actually do. One, introducing people, particularly younger people, to what county government does, right, and the programs and the services that we provide throughout the entire community. But the other thing is that, you know, not many individuals get to interact with an elected official or community yes. leaders at the level of that we were able to have conversations and talk about the experience. And so it was cool to be able to humanize not only the position, but also to show many of my classmates that politicians can be cool too.
Yeah, that's a great point. David, I got a question for you. So what made you decide to go back? And the second part is what was the hardest part about it? So what made you go back and what was the hardest part?
Yeah, so it's three things that really made me go back. First, you know, I'm a girl dad. I have a 17, a 7, and a 5-year-old. And for me, I wanted to be an example for them that as long as you put your mind towards something, you can absolutely do it. And then when I first started attending college, you know, my daughter was my oldest was a freshman in high school. And so this gives her an example of what to kind of expect. But also now that she's a junior in high school, now getting ready to see me walk across that stage, I hope that is going to inspire not only her, but my other two daughters to say that they're going to go to college and get their higher education. The second thing was my mother. You know, I lost my mother last year in July. And when I became the county executive, my mother continuously stressed the importance of me going back to school. And I can honestly say that when I enrolled and told her that I was going back, she was just as excited than when I became the county executive. So I made sure to finish in her honor. And then the last thing is that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, less than 30% of the individuals who live right here in the entire state of Wisconsin has some level or some form of higher education. And so I want to be able to inspire and motivate not just the next generation and younger people to embark on their educational journey, but other individuals who is in the same position as me. There are people listening right now who may still have 26 credits or 30 credits or thinking about going to technical college to better themselves. And I want them to know that you can do it. You know, it will be a sacrifice related to the time, but we have to take these opportunities to kind of bet on ourselves. And as, you know, a quote that I've been living by, particularly when it comes down to my education, is sometimes you have to leap before you look and realize that you can absolutely, again, do this. And then the greatest challenge, quite frankly, was, you know, time management. You know, county executive is not just a full-time job. It's almost like a lifestyle. And I also have to take care of my daughters and my wife. But I will be honest in saying that, Tom, I wouldn't have been able to do this work related to my schooling if it wasn't for, as I call her, my better three quarters, and that is my wife.
Yeah.
The level of support that she gave me was just tremendous. And so to see her making the sacrifices on my behalf to make sure that I got the education that I wanted and needed was just phenomenal. So those are the three things that pushed me, but also the challenge was really, you know, mastering the art of time management, because You know, I would go to school. I mean, or excuse me, I would get my daughters ready for school. I would then go to school, or I would go to work. And then if I'm coming home, depending on, you know, what my evening looked like, I spend a little bit more time with my daughters, tuck them into bed. And then after about 9, 9:30, I'm doing homework until midnight, 1 o'clock at times. And I know many individuals wait for Sunday to have football Sunday, but that was homework Sunday for me.
There you go. Yep.
I can say that sacrifice is paying off, but I can also say that I'm looking forward to getting my time back and enjoying some free time.
Yeah, and paying back your wife. I don't know if you've figured that out yet, but that's one of the main things that you're going to have to work on next, because that's awesome. Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
Oh, I'm paying her back. I am definitely paying her back. We have two trips scheduled for next year to show my appreciation.
awesome.
I'm so glad. It's funny you talk about time management. My joke is always like life work imbalance and like the art of time mismanagement, and just sort of like, what is the thing that absolutely requires like the bulk of my energy? Because, you know, the ebb and flow is never perfect, right? And we make plans and God laughs, right? But again, David, I just think it is absolutely remarkable that you have accomplished this feat. I almost lost my mind trying to get my degrees done. I marveled, and I still do, at working parents that are doing it. I don't know how you maintain the energy on that little sleep, to be totally honest with you, because damn. Now, what is your degree in, and how did you decide upon the degree?
My degree is in community engagement and education, and I was actually introduced to this degree a couple of years ago, probably within the third or fourth semester when I was much younger. I originally thought that I was going to go to school and study sociology, but then someone that I knew when I was working as a community organizer told me that they think that this will be a great program for me. And so before I decided to enter into the major, I took a particular class called the Milwaukee Community. And my professor at the time was Florence Johnson. She was so phenomenal with that particular course, and introduced me to other professors within the program, that I decided that was going to be my major.
Mm. Nice. So incredible. Tom, last words for David.
You know, now that you have this degree, you know, what jobs are you looking at pursuing?
Right now, I love being the county executive. And, you know, it's really about how do I utilize this degree, utilize the experience of my education to just further the work that we have been doing. And I'll be honest that, you know, this degree has already paid dividends when it comes down to the work that we're doing, particularly as it relates to like affordable housing, how we are combating violence in the community with community prevention intervention programs, and what we're doing to focus on making us the healthiest community in the state by achieving racial equity. And so right now, this is about how do I strengthen the current position that I am currently in. But if there are opportunities in the future that I could take advantage of, I will.
I love that. Thank you so much, awesome. Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. Congratulations on your upcoming Saturday graduation from UWM. My hat's off to you, sir. Tom and I come back with our final thoughts for this Thursday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked, everybody. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
IZERVAY is proven to slow GA progression.
IZERVAY.
day. Get your GA going slower.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay. Get your GA going slower.
Visit izervay.com. That's IZERVAY.com.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. My savings tip for today is about meal planning. I know you've heard of it, but let's talk about it. Meal planning will save you money, it reduces impulse purchases, it helps you not waste food, and it may be the very best thing you can do to cut back on your weekly spending. It also helps cut back the number of arguments we have in my house about what's for dinner. A writer of a recent Reader's Digest article said that she saved herself $500 a month on meal planning. I mean, we all eat differently, but those are some real savings. I know, meal planning can be a pain. So I reward myself with a treat while I plan. A beer, some ice cream, maybe a recipe magazine. And in my house, the planner does not have to be the shopper. That's real motivation. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
From Ashwaubenon to Alloway, this is 97.9 WGBW.
Welcome back, everybody. Or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. From real news to great conversation, we always have you covered. I've been having a great conversation and sometimes a wee bit of a tete-a-tete with my Thursday special co-host, Cardi. If you can be sure, we are put up on the stream on Facebook, X, and Instagram. I don't think... There you go. There we are. Hello to everybody out there. My very special guest co-host on Thursdays, Tom Paulswitz. He's a two-time congressional candidate and a small business owner, friend of mine and a friend of yours. Tom, I had asked on the show yesterday, and I'm going to ask this as a cue up to how do we all survive the holidays and take a break? One of our topics yesterday was, have you ever had to end a friendship or relationship because of politics? I have had to do that. Have you, and how did you manage through that?
Yeah, especially my first campaign. It was interesting because a whole bunch of people, especially in the business world, came up to me and said, well, you're a Democrat? I didn't know. And, you know, suddenly people who had known me for years were thinking differently about me just because there was a label on me. And, and it wasn't necessarily, I didn't change the way I spoke about things. I didn't do anything different, but they were, their interpretation of what was happening was different. And I lost some people along the way. Both my wife and I did. We lost friends. We lost some long-term friends. We made a whole bunch of other ones. But it's interesting when people who know you decide to not know you because they have perceptions because of a political label or whatever else you want to say. And I'm just a firm believer that when you sit down with anyone, you can find common ground.
Yes.
And it's usually just trying to sort through all that, because most people I've ever met, after a conversation, we can find what we're for and not necessarily talk about what we're against each other on. So, yes, lost friends along the way.
Your story's, I think, very important because it speaks to cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
And how our brain operates, frankly, all of us, from sort of almost a pre-programmed biased perspective, that people agree with me and the way that I see the world is, of course, correct. And any contrary information needs to be rejected. All of our brains work this way, and they operate this way because it was part of our survival mechanism. Our brain needs to fill in blanks. It needs to jump to conclusions back when we were hunting and gathering because it helped us assess threats. We don't live in that environment anymore, right? Like, at least
our brains don't know that, though.
Correct.
Our brains are not aware that change is happening.
Yep. Yes. So I find it just fascinating that people who had nodded their head in agreement with you when you described things before, shared your viewpoints, once you said, "I'm a Democrat," said, "Forget you, Tom. I'm done with you." Just fascinating. Now, Tom, you do a number of things as a small business owner, and maybe some of our listeners know this, but I certainly do. You are a professional coach. You help people manage their careers and deal with change and professional challenges. So I thought it'd be only appropriate, and we may revisit this next week too, to ask you, what are your thoughts on trying to survive the holidays and as people move into this period of time, what are your best practices?
Yeah, I always start with, I learned this definition a long time ago, that stress is the difference between where you are and where
you want to be.
Yeah, you know, just taking that step back and realizing that, okay, if I'm not there, how do I adjust myself to be where I'm at and be present in the moment? And a lot of times that helps alleviate a lot of things. Sometimes you're not where you want to be, and it's not the place that is really helping you. But it's understanding that you're on a path and you're on a journey, and it's better when you have people around you that you love and respect and will listen. So whatever you need to do over the holiday season is just, you know, grab people that you haven't seen in a while, reach out to people, do not spend it alone, but spend it with other people that will listen to you and respect you and show you some love, because it goes a long way to just being able to bring that together and have a much better outlook, because the next 4 years are going to be fascinating. They're going to be disgusting. There's going to be a roller coaster of emotions. So just prepare yourself. But I think the best way to prepare yourself is get grounded and make sure you have a great support system.
And maybe hop off the socials for a couple of days.
Take a break every now and then.
Yeah, so important. Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz. He is my guest co-host every Thursday here on the Maggie Dawn Show. I really appreciate your time and your insights. Tom, that's going to do it for us here on the Maggie Dawn Show. But don't go anywhere. Dom Salvia is up next, my little buddy. He's got a great show that follows mine every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6. He's got our keyword coming up for the 4 o'clock hour in Civic Media's Grown-Up Gift List Text to Win contest. You're going to want to get that keyword texted in via the app so you can win $100 or an overnight stay at the Chula Vista and be entered to win one of our 8 grown-up grand prizes like espresso makers, robot vacuums, luggage, and this one, which is very adult, humidifiers.
Yes.
When you've got a humidifier, you know you're an old fart, and I mean that with a lot of respect. I've got two of them.
Much needed.
Yes, much needed these days. Always remember, everybody, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Stay warm, everybody.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we make our popcorn pick of the week with morning show host and former Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt. And Madison film critic Rob Thomas joins the show, who has likely seen Jim's pick.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you, and highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live.
Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The U.S. has made initial contact with the American man believed to be Travis Timmerman, located today in Syria following the fall of the Assad regime. He disappeared earlier this year. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. working to bring him home, along with still trying to locate another missing American, journalist Austin Tice. ABC's Shannon Kingston with more.
There's been almost no sign of him since the year he went missing, 2012. Syrians are looking through the prisons, searching for their loved ones. And the Tice family, they're doing the same from afar, just praying, hoping they find any sign of him in the rubble the brutal Assad regime has left behind in the country.
President-elect Trump ringing the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange today and also celebrating being named Time Magazine's Person of the Year. The incoming White House press secretary also confirms the president-elect has invited China's leader to attend his inauguration. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hayes.